Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, the BMW Championship, maybe one of the better rounds in the history of the PGA Tour, at least the backside. Victor Hovland gets his first win in the playoffs. We have the USAM in the books. Nick Dunlop from Alabama is victorious there. We have some LPGA talk. They're still across the pond. We have some Michigan Women's AM talk to get caught up on that took place last week. We have the Tour Championship, the final stop of the season at East Lake. We will run through where everyone's starting, just kind of get some insight there as far as what we're expecting. We have the Ryder Cup automatic qualifiers set, so we'll go over those quickly, and then we will finish it off with a recap of Brad and I's trip to Minnesota. But first, that back nine by Victor Hovland, Brad, I will remember that round of golf for a very long time. He was so unconscious. I don't know what it was mesmerizing to watch. That's why you wake up every day and you watch the game of golf. That is why.
Oh yes. Yeah.
I was just like in utter shock from because you see guys make birdies in bunches, but not to where maybe it's like a mixture of if they just roll in a few long putts and they happen to have par fives in the right spots, so it just keeps the birdie train going. But this was just like utter domination from hitting his tee shot, hitting his second shot, and making the putt. He was not forced to make a long putt. He was making putts. I saw his approaches on the backside were like, they were like 9, 7, 6, 12 a foot. Like the guy could not miss.
So his last round, his total true strokes gained according to Data Golf was 7.69. That's incredible.
After what I wouldn't say it was a lackluster front nine, but he wasn't exactly. I don't think you're expecting him to go out there and shoot a 28 on the back.
Yeah.
So he had just some numbers associated with this very impressive round of golf. His back nine, he went birdie, 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 par, birdie, birdie, par, birdie, birdie. And 17, 18 are absolutely some of the hardest holes of golf they're going to play all year. And he played them back-to-back holes, and he did it in 6 shots. I mean, the shot on 18 coming in to leave himself where he did, right up the hill with a little bit of right-to-left break, is wildly impressive. Having 12 threes on the scorecard ain't too bad. It's a lot of threes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean... He was hitting his approach shots so well, like just so close. I mean, his true strokes gained approach was 1.54 for all four rounds, not just the fourth round. I'm sure there's a way that you can get that granular on Data Golf, but I am unsure of how to do that at the moment. But I mean, man, he was just landed it in there like it was a soft pillow.
And I think this is the first time now in at least 2 weeks between the FedEx St. Jude and here where you almost kind of expected fireworks on Sunday from somebody. It's when that was, in this case, catching Lucas Glover, and it just didn't happen. And then to see it happen, to see Scotty and Matt Fitzpatrick get caught, I remember vividly it. I don't think it was Trevor Immelman. I think it was, I think it must have been Nabilo, maybe, said something like along the lines of, this is a two-horse race now. And this was right before the lead group, Scotty and Matt, made the turn, I believe. And Victor maybe had one or two birdies already on the backside. And it did feel like it was at a time. I think it was a four-shot gap. And then just out of nowhere, here comes Victor. So for the first time in at least a few weeks, it feels like we actually had some dramatics on Sunday, which was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, for sure. I know one guy that you wanted to talk about was Max Homa. And I, this ties back to Victor Hovland, but correct me if I'm wrong. Second round, Max Homa, did he beat the course record or did he tie it?
He beat it. He beat it. So I think it was there was two 62s. I want to say it was him and Xander.
No, it was, so yeah, so it was Max. So second round, he goes out and sets the course record. How do you think he feels when the next day, Sam Burns goes out and ties the course record, and then the following day after that, Victor goes out and beat it? He had that thing for all of 2 days.
Yeah, that course was ripe for the picking. I mean, that's hard golf course, and it's more proof that if the greens are soft and there's not much wind, they could play a course at whatever yardage, they could play it however tight they want, and these guys are still going to go shoot close to 20 under par.
Yeah.
It's a testament to obviously how good these guys are. Just rounding out the top five, you mentioned Max Homa finishing T5th, Brian Harman also T5th. It's nice to see a couple weeks before the Ryder Cup, Brian Harman have a little bit more recent success before the after the Open. So I'm glad to see him playing well. Rory McIlroy finishing fourth. Matt Fitzpatrick and Scottie Scheffler both tied for T2nd behind Victor Hovland at 15 under. And they both had really tough to say if you're Scotty or Matt that you let that one slip away from you. I mean, they both shot 66. So did Rory. They all shot 66, but it's hard to beat a 61 when push comes to shove.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if I'm going to tie this in. I'll just say it now because I found this interesting when I was looking at as we're going into the final round of the Tour Championship. There are five Europeans inside the top 11 of the FedEx Cup, which I think is which if you would have told me that beginning of the year, I think I would have said that's really surprising. So it's Tommy Fleetwood at 11, Matt Fitzpatrick at 10, John Rahm at 4, Rory McIlroy at 3, Victor Hovland at 2. And you almost can just say it's 5 and 5 because Lucas Glover probably isn't going to make the team at 5. So the top 10 in the FedEx Cup is an even split for European and your United States, which I found, like I said, I found a little bit shocking.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. That shapes up nicely for a Ryder Cup year.
It doesn't feel too nicely when we're going over to their place. I feel like that's well, recipe getting our teeth kicked in.
Let's just hope for some good golf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I felt like I had to mention that. My last point about the BMW Championship is Jordan Spieth goes bogey, bogey to finish, and still somehow, I don't know how he did it, but he did everything in his power to not play in the Tour Championship. Must not be a big fan of the humidity down there. And somehow still makes it. I think he even makes it he makes it with one to spare somehow. Crazy.
Yep.
I guess he knew what he had to do and he did it.
Yeah, he was trying to get home so he could hang out with his buddy JT, but
that's true.
I give Sahith his first chance at tour or at East Lake.
Yeah, that would have been the noble thing of him to do.
You know what we didn't? So speaking of Justin Thomas, you know what we didn't see this year is usually at the end of every year, he posts like his goals for the year and which ones he achieved and which ones he didn't.
Oh, the year's not over yet.
Well, it is for him.
Well, I think I'm going to guess that on his goal sheet for this year was the Ryder Cup. So I think we have to wait to see it.
That's fair.
I did see, speaking of Justin Thomas, that he is playing in he has signed up to play in the Fortinet.
Yep.
Like a week before the Ryder Cup or week and a 2 weeks. So that seems, and you're not like the Ryder Cup, the captain's picks have already been made by then. So if you were to read between the lines, I would read that means he's not playing.
Yeah, that's kind of how I would take that. But you could also look at it as he wants to get more tournament reps in before he plays, since he wouldn't have played any tournament golf in so long.
Yeah, maybe. I found that interesting. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So.
All right. Let's. So congratulations to Victor Hovland. I mean, I just, once again, that was, those are one of those rounds of golf that I will remember for a good while of time. I was pretty blown away from start to finish.
So I did love in the coverage after, because obviously there was still a group out. Scotty and Fitzy were still out when he was in, and I love the camera trying to cut over to, or, well, they were just showing, you know, Victor trying to get a reaction out of him, like after he realized that he won, and it just never came.
No, that reaction never materialized. No, they were trying so hard.
It got to the point where they're like, oh, well, it must be delayed in there or something. It's like, it's not delayed. That's just who he is.
Yeah. No, I got a good chuckle out of that too. All right. So let's move on to the USAM. USAM was taking place this past weekend, finished about the same time that the BMW Championship did. So this was at Cherry Hills, co-hosted with Colorado Golf Club. Nick Dunlop, he's going to be a sophomore at Alabama, won 4-3 over Neil Shipley, who goes to Ohio State. Nick made 13 birdies in 33 holes, so just an onslaught of birdies. They were tied after the first 18. Nick was 5-over through 7 holes on the first day of stroke play. So he had a triple, a double. I think he birdied his first hole and then made a triple and a double, hit the wrong ball, made another bogey, and then was able to obviously turn it around from there to, I want to say he shot even par or 2-under in the stroke play overall to finish kind of in the middle of the pack for stroke play side of things. Ended up beating Gordon Sargeant in the first round, who's the number one ranked amateur in the world. Nick being the 9th ranked amateur in the world. And I just want to run through some prep highlights from him, because it's a long list. So you kind of had a good feeling he was going to be a good player. So he was ranked number one junior golfer in the class of 2022, according to Golf Week. Named the 2021 American Junior Golf Association Boys Golfer of the Year, so the AJJ Golfer of the Year. Alabama Golf Association 2022 First Team All-State, 2021 Alabama Boys State Junior Player of the Year. Earned medalist honors at the 2021 U.S. Junior Amateur Championship, which he also ended up going on to win. He played 11 events in 2021, won one of them, finished top five in five occasions and finished in the top 20 on 8 occasions. So really just a very winner of the 73rd Alabama Boys State Junior Championship. So he kind of destined for greatness. This is the one that I saw this one last. It's the last one. If I was them, I would lead with this one, because this is, set the course record at Highland Golf Club in Birmingham in June of 2016. He shot a 59, 1100 par, as he was going into the 7th grade. I was picking my boogers when I was in the 7th grade. I was doing nothing productive with my life. Just nothing. I was maybe participating in the first tee.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Here come the keyboard warriors. Yeah, what tees did he play from?
It would be one thing if I don't even know how, if you can make a lot of birdies or just make birdies at that age, I think that's really impressive. But to just do it 11 times is in the course of 18 holes is really, really sensational. I don't know if you caught it. He gave a little bit of a weird, his post round speech is a little bit weird. Like he pretty much condoned underage drinking. Like the broadcaster asked him what he was going to do with the trophy. And then Nick goes, well, can I say it on TV? And then looked at him and I was like, and then he started out by his first words out of his mouth were like, this was a hell of a performance. And I was like, well, that's probably, hell is not like a, end all be all world. But I was like, this guy's just firing on all. He's just letting him roll.
Oh, he's fired up.
Yeah. So he joins in really good company. Only player to win both the Junior Am and the USAM, Tiger Woods. Only the difference being that Tiger did it. He won three Junior Ams in a row and then three USAMs in a row, all in succession.
Which will never be broken.
No, that's going to stand forever. That will never even come close to being touched.
That might be one of the greatest sports stats of all time. I mean, that's incredible. That's 6 years. Well, let's think about that. How many matches per year? 6. So 6 straight years of 6 straight of match. Is that just 36 straight wins?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you don't get, it's not like a double elimination. You're out. I wonder if he had to have at one point, like one of those kids that, like in the junior, the last year of him being in the Junior Am, there had to be a kid in like the round of 64 that was like, you know what? You just take this one. So we'll 36 ish. There's probably one or two withdraws there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're all excited for your first ever Junior Am and you get paired up against Tiger Woods. And
yeah, you make a you make a birdie on your last hole to move up on the in the rankings for match play and it ends up putting you against Tiger.
Yeah.
I'll try his head home.
Yep.
All right. So congratulations to Nick. It looked like the crowds at I always like to like see how many people the USAM brings out, because I think this would be one of the best events to go watch if I was going to go watch live golf. I feel like when you're watching live golf, a PGA Tour event, full field, you feel like you're missing a lot of action, whether that be you're sitting in one spot and watching just one hole or a couple, whether that be a green and a tee shot sort of thing. But with a USAM championship match, like just watching these guys, I think would be awesome. So, and it looked like the crowds were mirrored that as far as the number of people there out there. It was crazy. So,
yeah. Yeah. I would have loved to go on and watch this one when I lived out there. And of course, all the cool stuff that happens in Colorado happens after I leave.
Yeah. What's that all about?
I don't know.
Crazy. All right. Let's move on. LPGA, they are still over on the other side of the pond, ISPS, Honda World Invitational. This is in Antrim, North Ireland. Alexa Pano gets her first victory of her career. She ended up shooting a 76 in the first round, fired a 70 second round, 69 third round, 66 fourth round to win in a playoff over Esther Henselit. So congratulations to Alexa. I do want to get us caught up on the Michigan Women's Am. I believe this took place a week and a half ago or so. We had a busy episode last week. Katie Chipman ends up victorious. She is a graduate of Grand Valley State University, was an All-American there, went on to try to play on the Epson/LPGA Tour. Doesn't sound like she had much success, so she reinstated as an amateur and obviously is having success now. She played against Olivia Hamilia in the finals. Olivia's heading to Oakland University in the fall to play golf. And then Michigan State's junior, Shannon Kennedy, won the medalist honors. All right. On to Eastlake, the final stop of the 2023 playoffs, final stop of the 2023 season. The third of the three stock par 70s we are playing, averaged 67.9 strokes last year. That's the lowest so far. It was a little bit soft last year, similar to the BMW Championship this year. So that was preferred lies first two rounds. So it stayed soft pretty much the entire rest of the week. I do expect scoring to be a little bit higher. Dry conditions are in the forecast. Day temperatures reaching somewhere in the mid to upper 90s. We're back to Southern golf for these boys in the end of August, which hot and muggy. But I do think East Lake does a really good job with, they have that sub-air greens that will keep it, I'd like to think, keep it fairly consistent on the greens at least. Track tips at 73-46, pair of par fives, number 6, number 18. I don't know if you remember, Brad, back when like Jim Furyk won the FedEx Cup, they had the 9 switched around. I don't remember when they switched the 9s. But we used to finish on a par 3, which I'd never
liked. Yeah, he won in 2010.
Yeah. I've never been a fan of finishing on the par 3, so I'm glad they switched that up.
Finishing or starting?
Correct.
Which we will talk a lot about starting on par 3s
mm-hmm.
later.
So just running through the leaderboard and where everyone's starting. If you're not familiar, that we are on the PGA Tour and we're playing a net event to determine who the best golfer of the year was, which is pretty asinine to say out loud. Scottie Scheffler is going to start at 10 under par, Victor Hovland at 8, Rory McIlroy at 7, John Rahm at 6, Lucas Glover at 5 under. And then we have a slew of guys starting at 4 under, Max Homa, Patrick Cantlay, Brian Harman, Wyndham Clark, Matt Fitzpatrick. At 3 under is Tommy Fleetwood, Russell Henley, Keegan Bradley, Ricky Fowler, and Xander Schauffele. 2 under is Tom Kim, Sungjae Im, Tony Finau, Corey Connors, Siwoo Kim. 1 under is Taylor Moore, Nick Taylor, Adam Shane, Colin Morikawa, Jason Day. Even par is Sepp Straka, Sam Burns, Emiliano Grillo, Tyrrell Hatton, and Jordan Spieth. So, Brad, where do you think, like, who is on this leaderboard that has no chance? Is it the 200 numbers, 300 numbers, or is it really just anybody that's John Rahm and above?
You know, I think it's anybody that's John Rahm and above. I just, the way that this format is set up, and we talked about it in pre-episode, I say the same thing every year. I don't have a solution, but I don't like the way that this is set up. I mean, I just, any guy who's starting out 8, 9, 10, you know, however many strokes back, that's tough sledding. And I know we just witnessed literally this past weekend, someone come out and come from behind, but I feel like that's a little different. Like when you're already in the round versus like starting out knowing that you're ahead. And like, I would like to think for professional golfers, it probably doesn't change their strategy like a ton. Like Scotty's still going to go out and be aggressive, right? Like he's not just going to go try to make pars. Like he knows he's going to still have to like make some birdies, but still, like, no matter who you are, just the confidence of knowing going into round one that you're ahead. It's different round four, obviously, like when you have the lead going into the last round of the event. But I just feel like you're able to build up so much confidence with that lead starting out that it just makes it tough for these guys that are towards the bottom.
Oh, absolutely. And it can change too much, but I do think it totally comes down to that first round. If those top guys just play average, it doesn't take necessarily an all-star round to catch up to those guys. And if they go out and shoot, let's just say they go out and shoot 70, par 70, shoot even par. I mean, I easily expect like a few of those 4-under, 5-under guys to post a 65 or a 64 or 63, something like that. And at least, so I think it really obviously comes down to what Scotty does, because that's a big two-shot difference between him and Victor. And if Victor plays so-so and Scotty plays so-so, I think that lets a lot of guys in. And to your point about just not having a right idea, I don't think the old way was necessarily correct either. I didn't love how if you were in the top five going into that round or into that tournament, like you could win. And if you were in sixth, then you just didn't really stand a chance. So at least now, like, it feels like it's a little bit more in the golfer's hands, as far as like you have at least you have a known objective of what you can do to win. Not like you necessarily makes it any more easier, but yeah, I do not love that it's a net event either. I just don't know what else you can realistically do to make it any better.
Yeah, I think the only thing you could do is just abolish the whole net scoring.
Yeah.
Like, but then obviously there's just no reward for the guys throughout the year who play well and earn those rankings. So it's probably just, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it is what it is. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably, kind of a deal.
Probably not much you can be able to do about it.
Yeah. Especially cause I also feel like, so I actually have the course stats kind of pulled up in front of me here, mm-hmm. and 30%, over 30% of these guys' shots last year were from 100 to 150 yards. So it's not like an overly challenging, I mean, it's a difficult golf course. All of the ones they play are, but I don't think it's the most challenging golf course they're going to play all year, which there also makes it a little bit more challenging for the guys that start off at a lower, or I should say higher, I guess, in golf, higher score, because you're not going to see these guys up near the top just like completely blow up. Like that rarely happens, I feel like, in this event.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do want to run through the odds board. I'll do half of the winner with starting strokes, and then we'll do half without. Let's see where that gets us. So let's start with the winner. This includes starting strokes. So Scottie Scheffler is at +130, Rory McIlroy at +330, Victor Hovland at +500, John Rahm at +900, Patrick Cantlay at +1800, Max Homa at 35, Xander at 35, and we'll close it out at 55 with Lucas Glover. And then for winner without strokes, actually, no, this is, I need it's, winner.
They have a, FanDuel has a winner without Scottie Scheffler option, that's which I'm assuming means if Scotty wins, whoever gets second.
Yeah, just whoever's the highest on the leaderboard minus Scotty.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised they don't have a starting. Let's see here.
But I was just taking a look at while you're looking at that really quick. Mm-hmm. I was taking a look at the data golf numbers on the tournament last year. And I think another thing that's really going to benefit Scotty with this lead is that you don't necessarily have to be amazing with your putter on this course. So for example, the T2 last year, he placed T2 last year, and he had negative 0.77 strokes gained putting. So if he can just, I can't remember off the top of my head what his starting position was last year, but if he can just stay at that or just be slightly better, because even the guys around him, Xander, negative 0.51, he finished solo fourth. There's really nobody outside of Rory who did finish first, but there's really nobody in the top 10 who had an astronomically high strokes gained putting number. So just another thing, I guess, for Scotty that is just going to make it harder for these guys to catch him this week.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to argue that. You're going to give the guy a 2-shot lead, and that's going to be tough to overcome. I do think, I don't expect it from, I think if you're looking for value, I do see, and I'm a little annoyed I can't find strokes, winner without strokes, but I could easily, I don't love the value on Rory McIlroy at 330, but that's the first one that I see that I say, okay, there might be a little bit of value. That, only starting 3 shots back, that can be made up so quickly.
Especially, yeah, I mean, a player with Rory's caliber, I could see it, especially at this course. I mean, he won last year. So and he was first in the field in strokes gained total last year. So I could see it. I think what's going to be hard for him and where my questions are with him is he was putting a lot better at this event last year, second overall in the group of 30 for strokes gained putting. So we'll see. But also he was lacking in some of the other areas of his game that he's been improving on this year. So who knows, maybe that'll offset. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him catch up. John Rahm, Victor, it would have to be one of those guys. I can't even really see like Xander or Patrick Cantlay catching up.
No.
So I feel like it's just like we've said it all year with the three-headed dragon. I almost feel like, you know, you just kind of swap out John Rahm for Victor, but also John Rahm's only four strokes back. He could make that up pretty quickly.
I don't know what to make of John. What's happening with John Rahm right now? Where if you were to put a gun to my head and say, pick a golfer that you want to play for you essentially, it would be John Rahm over Scottie Scheffler. But I keep seeing Scottie's name. It's almost like Scottie just doesn't have that off week. So he's just always right there in like that top five, top 10 range, where John just finished kind of middle of the pack, where you keep expecting him to just break through. And it does not seem to be happening yet, at least. So yeah, four shots, obviously not that many. But I can't get a pulse on Mr. Rahm at the moment. But I do like Rory a lot. I mean, the past history, it's hard to argue. He has some success here.
Yeah, for sure. I gotta laugh. So what's that meme where it's like there's one person that doesn't belong or one of these doesn't belong? I feel like that's like Lucas Glover at the tour championship this year, starting at 5 under all by himself.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the guy's earned it.
Yeah, he has.
We're taking butt off for this.
He has.
All right. Anything else on the tour championship?
No, I think that about wraps it up. Look for somebody who's accurate off the tee, and can putt halfway decent and find value there, I'd say.
Agreed. All right, let's talk about, so quickly, let me, do you have the Ryder Cup qualifiers right there?
Yes, I do. Do you want me to run through the Americans? Because I don't think the Europeans changed, but the Americans did. So.
I don't think the European team is finalized either.
No, but I think it's still the same guys projected, whereas the U.S., we did see a swing. So I'll run through the top six really quick. So in first, we have Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, and Xander Schauffele. The one who did slip into the seventh spot this week was Brooks Koepka. I don't think he has anything to worry about. Though I think he's pretty locked in. So, but then in the eighth position we have Jordan Spieth, who is ahead of Cameron Young, and then Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, Denny McCarthy, Justin Thomas, and then in the 16th spot we've got Lucas Glover.
All right. Well, we're gonna see.
I would say that Brooks, Jordan, Cam, and Colin are pretty locked in. And then you've got a pick between Keegan, Sam, Ricky, Denny, and Justin Thomas. And then I guess if you want to throw in Lucas Glover in there for the last spots.
Yeah, when you put it like that, that seems a little bit easier of a decision. That
feels, I think,
like
this week
it's a... whoever you said first after the four autos and then JT.
Yeah, I think that this week really helped shake things out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you'd have Keegan Bradley would be then the first guy after Colin Morikawa at the 11th spot. And then you'd have Justin Thomas at the 15th spot, which means you'd be skipping Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, and Denny McCarthy, which I don't think people are going to be up in arms about that. I could see people wanting Ricky Fowler, but maybe not necessarily over Justin Thomas. I would say that between Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa, with those names, there isn't a single guy there that I would be upset if you picked Justin Thomas over him.
No.
So if you picked him over Keegan or Sam, Ricky or Denny, I would be totally fine with any of those.
Agreed. All right. Let's talk about our Minnesota trip quickly.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what, it was pretty wild last night, going like getting ready for bed and thinking like just last week that this day we were just about to get in the car. So that was a long trip.
It was.
We were gone for a long time. So we went over pretty much our travel plan. So we played. Let's do letter grades and all the golf courses. I'll run through them real quick and we'll just do them one by one. So we played Gray Walls Wednesday afternoon at about 1 o'clock. What was your letter grade of Gray Walls?
So I'm going to give Gray Walls an A-.
That seems fair. Is it cracking your top 10 ever played?
Yeah, I think so. Without having it in front of me, I'd like to say so. So I didn't play well at all. And I don't think that the course was in great shape either, which is tough. So I have to give it the benefit of the doubt of a little bit of an imagination. But you can't deny that, like, it was just so cool how it was incorporated with the land that it was built on, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that really boosted it for me, the location and the scenery. I'd have to think that if you caught that course on a good day, that it would easily crack the top 10.
Yeah.
I don't mean a good day by, like, playing well, but, like, I think for me, at least, I did not think that the course conditions were very great.
Yeah, I think that's where it's just kind of tough to, because that course is never going to, I don't think it's ever going to look, as far as conditions go, like a ton better than that. Like that fescue blend grass just kind of looks like shit. And I think that's just kind of the way it is. And it's never going to roll that true. And it's just going to play that firm around the greens. And then also, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't want to say I expected more, because I don't think I did, but I would say an A- is fair. Where I think the only reason I'm rating it poorly is just because I hit some really like stupid wedge shots where there were a lot of turtleback greens that you didn't like. It's one of those courses that you have to play a bunch of times, which I feel like I say that all the time, but this really was one of those. And once you played a couple times, I think I would have won. I would have played another tee back, and then two, I probably would have put the driver away if we didn't play another tee back. I'm getting a little bit tired of. I'm about to just play the tips on myself, if that's what it, because I'm tired of. We hit the ball far enough, and we haven't gotten enough rain where the course plays firm. I don't care what the yardage says. I saw some bounces out there that were just absolutely massive, and we're essentially handcuffing ourselves to hit it into these spots that old Mike Fries, whatever his name is, the course designer, was not imagining.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, because I think that we have to end this, let's call it a misconception, that when you play a course for the first time that you can't tip it out. Because to your point, yes, that is the definition of a course that you need to get reps on, to understand where the ball is going to run, to know where the misses are, to really learn how to work the ball on the ground there. But at the same time, I hit my driver. I think I pulled it up. I think I hit my driver like twice the entire round, which I'm not necessarily saying that if we tipped it out, I would have hit it like a ton more, but I just think that I felt very restricted there lengthwise, and we're not even like, I mean, we're not we hit the ball decently far, but we're not like massive hitters. So I think that for whatever reason, whenever you play a course for the first time, you have this idea in your head that if you shorten it up, it'll play easier. But I'm not entirely convinced that that's the case.
Not for somebody like me, where I think my driver is probably quite a bit more consistent than my three wood and hybrid a lot of times, where I feel comfortable just hitting driver into the fat part of the fairway. And usually the fat part of the fairway requires you to be on the back tees. Just because you're only carrying it, let's just say 270, there's 30 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards of roll out there on a lot of those holes. So I think it got trip off to a good start. I'm more than glad we played it. I mean, that was a course I wanted to cross off the bucket list. I'm not going to be sprinting back up there to play again. But if the offer comes, I can't imagine I'll turn it down. I didn't feel like the price was overly too much, if really too much at all, for the course it was. And then Thursday morning we drove to Minnesota. Thursday morning, we played a course on the north side of the lake that we ended up staying on. It was called Grandview Lodge, which was actually sneaky. I don't want to say it was my favorite course, but it was the one I was like most impressed by, I think. So we played the pines. We started off on the marsh, and then went to the woods. The woods wasn't great, but the marshes was like fantastic. Was really, really good from the first hole to the ninth hole. The greens were spectacular. We were the first ones off, which I actually really like. I mean, had the freshest greens and all that. What'd you think of Grandview Lodge?
Yeah, I liked that course. I think it was an easier course for sure. It played a lot easier. It was a lot softer. Did we tip that one out? I can't even remember.
No, there was one tee box. There had to have been. I don't think we would have tipped that out.
No. I felt like it was a little bit more opened up lengthwise. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I was totally wrong. I kept hitting my driver at Gray Walls because I wanted to hit my driver so I could get reps for it.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I felt so restricted there. Simply because I kept saying it. I was like, I shouldn't hit this, but I want to because I just want to make sure that I can hit my driver well for, you know, team events. But anyway, I thought that course was really nice. It was softer. You could definitely tell that they got more rain up that way, and that they watered that course a lot more. But I enjoyed it. I thought it had some fun holes. There weren't really many holes that I thought were poorly laid out. I'd say I'd give that one like a B+.
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's where I would be as well. And like I said, I don't think it was necessarily better than Gray Walls, but I think I was more surprised by the overall play than I was of Gray Walls. And then we played Social 9. This is where things get a little interesting. We played the Social 9 on Thursday night, which was not great. I mean, it was a par 3 course. That was a par 3 course. That was a par 3 course. That mm-hmm. was a par 3 course. So no real takeaways from that, except for the fact I won two skins and I don't think I'm going to get a buck from anybody for those.
Oh, I paid you.
You paid me. Yes. And I think for some reason, I think somebody else might have like randomly like walked up to me. It's like, here's your money. I was like, wow, what a guy. So we did that on Thursday night. And then Friday was a beer drinking day. And I did my best just to follow those rules. We played 18 holes on Pine Beach East, which was right on property, right out from the clubhouse. They have this old saying that like the closer the first tee is to the clubhouse, the better the golf course. It did not necessarily apply to Pine Beach East in really any sense of the word. It was the perfect golf course if you just wanted to go play golf. And you didn't really, it wasn't going to blow your socks off. It wasn't going to do anything like that, but it was just a place to play golf. With a par six.
Yes, par six. Actually a fun hole. What was it, like 600 yards?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, yeah. What do you mean fun? It was just straight away.
it was just fun to play a par six, I guess.
That's true.
There were some firsts for me this past weekend. I had never played as a I think it was like a nine some that we played for the par, the social nine. That was a first for me.
That was a
I had
lot.
never have I ever played a par six, and I had never played a course that had a hole where you could select which green you wanted to play. Those were all firsts for me.
Oh, that was on the classic.
The classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
So
so Pine Beach East, let's talk a little bit about just so the format. So the first nine was a scramble, second nine was a shamble. I lost the scramble. I had a tough go. And we ended up rallying back and winning the shamble. But I thought, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but I just struggled to get going with the way that the like partners were kind of set up. I think that, what are your thoughts on, for a scramble preparing, do you think it's better to put two low handicaps together, or a low handicap and a high handicap, or two high handicaps?
I mean, it kind of depends on who they're playing against, but I think it's tough to go throw two people to the wolves. Typically, you only want to throw one person, so I think that a player kind of gets the short end of the stick. With so like Patty, for example, he can't drive the ball to save his life. Like it just his driver just does not work. But everything else is actually like really good. You get it like a putter in his hand, he can make anything closer to the green. As closer you get, the better he gets. Like we were a real problem in the scramble and in the shamble, especially the shamble when Patty's getting all the like. This is where it becomes nice to have a high and a low, because where Patty's getting six shots in nine holes and he's using my drive,
Yeah.
which it makes
I
it
think that,
really challenging for their team to play off
and
of
I
him.
agree. I personally think that, and like you said, it also depends on like who they're playing against. Like if you've got two scratch golfers on the other team, then you're not going to want to send out But I think what makes like I like playing with a higher handicap, but where it gets difficult is if that person's having like a tough day, which a high handicap certainly can, like
Very,
pretty
very likely.
frequently. And then if you get partnered up against other high handicappers who are playing well, then that low handicapper really gets the short end of the stick. And you got to play just super conservative golf. So that was kind of where we struggled in our match that first day.
And then Friday afternoon we went to Pine Beach West, which at this point the silver bullets were flowing. I don't remember all too much of Pine Beach West. I don't, if from what I do remember, I didn't mind Pine Beach West that much. That was the one I think I was looking forward to the least, because it's only a par 67, seven par threes. But overall, it was, I'm trying to think of like how they reminded me a little bit of like not a like a little bit less than somewhere between maybe like a Chestnut Valley and a Springbrook, like a better conditioned Chestnut Valley, I would say, or better conditioned Springbrook, because I think maybe Chestnut probably equal Chestnut maybe. That's kind of where I envisioned it. I think overall the even if those golf courses weren't great, the overall accommodations I think almost made up for it. Like the living situation and where everything was better than what we've had in the years past. So it kind of makes up for maybe the little bit lack of the better golf courses. But then Saturday morning we played their marquee golf course. It's called the Classic. I want to say it's 59th public course in the world or in the country out of according to Golf Digest. And I thought that was really good. Top 59 in the top 59 in the country. I think I told a couple of the guys like that's a feat. Like a really, I don't know if it was quite that. And I don't know what makes a golf course top 59. There were some really cool holes, and I really don't have anything bad to say about it. But I just when I think of like top 60 golf courses in the entire country, I feel like there's got to be top more than 60. But I just haven't, I obviously haven't played them. So I really did like that. I'd probably give that I'll give that an A minus as well, I believe.
I'd probably say a high A minus for me. It didn't check enough boxes for me to quite get up to an A, but if we're talking like a grading scale where an A minus is like a 90 to a 93, then it'd be more like a 93 for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, 100%.
I thought, and I know that you and I talked about it a couple times and we disagreed on it. I thought those greens were just ripping. I mean, I don't generate a ton of spin with my wedges anymore, and because they're like old and a little beaten down. But I zipped a 50 degree back farther than I ever have in my entire life on that course, all the way off the green. And I didn't, it's like when I hit it, I didn't feel like I, you know, compressed it up. Like I didn't feel like a shot that was going to be super zippy or anything like that. But I mean, this thing spun 10, 15 feet off the green all the way down a hill. They were ripping. And so I thought that they were, I thought the greens were the hardest part of that course for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think where our disagreement came is like, I just never felt like I had a flat putt. So I could never, like, they were probably faster than the 13 going down the hills. Once that putt got rolling, there was zero friction on those greens. They had no reason to stop unless they came to a point that was no longer down the hill. But yeah. So that was where I never had felt like a dead straight putt to really get a good gauge. But I guess I just kept going back to like, if like 12 and a half, 13 is like fat, like really fast tour speed. So I don't,
yeah,
that would be that would be way fast.
I'm glad you say that again now, because I remember saying to the guys in our group midway through the round, I think the reason probably why I felt and maybe others felt that they were so fast is they really put those pins positions in a spot where they collected right at the bottom of those slopes on a lot of the holes.
Yeah.
And it would be pretty close to the edge of the green. So leaving yourself with an uphill putt was really challenging. I think that I had a ton of downhill putts, which obviously is going to increase on this, like from like a speed factor, obviously a downhill putt's going to go faster than an uphill one. Mm-hmm. But maybe now thinking it out loud, that is probably what added a lot to the challenge, is they did a really solid job of putting some of those pins in places where you couldn't really leave yourself with an uphill putt.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad we did match play on that course. So you're just playing against the guy, because there were a lot of pins that you just didn't want a single thing to do with.
No, absolutely not. And there were a lot of putts out there too. So stroke play would have gotten out of hand pretty quickly, at least in my group. Even for me, I mean, that par five right there, I zipped it off the green, chipped it back up, lipped out, and then lipped out a second putt. So there are a lot of putts out there.
Oh my. Yeah, I don't even want to know. I was going to count up the putts, but then I was like, it's match play, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, I felt like everything off the tee was pretty fair. A lot of shots over water, which don't necessarily bother me. I think that we experienced that a lot where we grew up. I think maybe just like number seven at Bayview just conditions you to just not care about hitting over water when you're like 14, having to hit like 180, 190 shot over water.
Yeah.
But really cool water feature. I mean, those were like large bodies of water on that course.
Yeah.
Like it was pretty awesome. So yeah, I'd say A-, but a high A-, 93% for me on that one.
Overall, I thought it was a great trip. I mean, I obviously love golf. That's a good, it wasn't, when I think of golf trips, that's not too much golf where you're over golfing by any means. And I think you have a nice mixture of drinking beer and golf. And I think I might have mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago. I think going into a golf trip, it's either a golf trip with drinking or a drinking trip with golf. And this kind of tears on that very fine line between a nice little mixture of both.
Yeah, no, I had a blast, man. I mean, that was definitely a lot of guys who really care about the golf, which makes it a lot of fun. And even the guys who maybe don't care as much about the golf, they still play. Everybody still plays. They all give it their best. So yeah, I had a blast. I mean, we still went swimming, hung out at the pool and stuff. There are plenty of other things to do. So it was a great time for sure. But you know what I was thinking about today? I don't know about you, but I have no more golf trips planned for this year.
Nope.
This year I had a lot of golf trips planned, more than average, and I have like zilch on the schedule.
I still think there's time in the end of September to get a UP golf trip on the horizon.
I would not hate that. I also wouldn't hate a like fall West Michigan loop. Get the guys down here. Sounds could play, nice. Try to get like a Muskegon and maybe then like see if we can't weasel on to like Wusquehon or, you know, head down over that way.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, we'll get something planned. Hopefully. I feel like we say this
hopefully.
Hopefully. I feel like we say this every year. But this is the year.
This is the year.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else. Good luck to the folks betting on the Tour Championship at East Lake.
Alrighty. Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right. Talk to you.